Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound and Swiss Political Roundup with Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and analyst, Peter Holler. Peter, an uneventful federal council election in Bern, with the status quo retained, except for the fact that the People's Party did not get the second seat it wanted. Why not?
You have to really look at the Swiss political system as an agreement since 1959, an unwritten agreement, which says that the four biggest parties in the country represented in Parliament should go into the cabinet. In other words, the cabinet is made up of four parties since 1959. And the general rule accepted, again unwritten, was that the three biggest parties all had two seats in the seven-person cabinet, and the fourth party had one seat. Now, the biggest party in Switzerland is the People's Party with around 27% of the vote, and they only have one seat. The second biggest party, the Social Democrats, with about 26% of the vote, have two seats. And the Radicals and the Liberals, which are the third biggest party, but they only have less than 20%, more like 16% of the vote, they also have two cabinet members. And the Christian Democrats, a largely Catholic party, has only one member and about 14 or 12% of the vote. But we have an amazing situation that one splinter party of the People's Party, it's called the BDP, if you like, a sort of bourgeois middle-of-the-road party.
Yeah, the Conservative Democrats, I think, is their official English name.
Mm-hmm. They have 5.2% of the national vote, and they have a cabinet minister who came in on the People's Party ticket 4 years ago and basically changed the color of her skin in the last 4 years and is now a member of a new party, which is really very marginal.
So before we continue, Peter, purely arithmetically, numerically, regardless of your political persuasion, in all rights and fairness, then, the People's Party should have received two seats on the Federal Council, and it did not.
Yes, without a doubt, it should have two seats, because if the Social Democrats and the Radicals and Liberals have two, then obviously a party which is larger than both those should have two seats. Why it didn't get them? Basically, you can say all the other parties ganged up on the People's Party to make sure that they are excluded from their rightful place, if you like, in inverted commas, in the cabinet. One reason is it's based on envy, because the People's Party has had a remarkable success in the past 10 years, and I should imagine most of the other parties are jealous of the success it's had, and they're also jealous of the very un-Swiss, very open and fairly tough line which the People's Party has taken in Parliament. And that is certainly not A, the Swiss style, and B, it's a good reason to be against the People's Party.
And the thought also occurs to me that maybe deep down inside, many parliamentarians, when they cast the vote, simply don't like the politics and the ideology of the People's Party, and simply they don't want to see them too strong in the federal government.
I think actually one can go further. There are probably a lot of parliamentarians who don't want to see the People's Party in the cabinet anyway. But of course, the sticking point there is that in a democracy, if you have nigh on 30% of the national vote, you have to be represented in the executive branch.
Okay, but we get back to the game of politics, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
What is interesting about the election is that one of the complaints about the People's Party in Parliament has always been that they don't toe the line, they don't play the game, and they are too hard line. And before the election, the party decided not to have hardline candidates because they reckoned perhaps Parliament would then give them the second seat if they didn't have hardliners. So they brought two politically fairly soft options, Mr. Walter, the Farmers Union president, and also a French Swiss candidate, and they both had a very miserable result in Parliament during the election. And what the People's Party is now saying is, you don't want our hardliners, but you don't want any softer candidates either.
Now let's go back to Evelyn Widmer-Schlumpf, who is the economics minister on the cabinet and a member of the Conservative Democratic Party. This is speaking rather pragmatically. To go back to what you said, she was originally part of the People's Party, was voted in on that from that party into the federal cabinet, and then changed to the newly founded breakaway, we could call it Conservative Democrats, thereafter. Now, I wonder, though, in point of fact, isn't her ideology, isn't that of the Conservative Democrats, really, close enough to the ideology of the People's Party so that we could say, in effect, she is, in a way, a second People's Party member of the cabinet?
To that, one has to say that nobody really knows what the Conservative Democrats stand for because they have no party program. And secondly, if you like, Mrs. Widmer-Schlumpf, being a leopard who changed her spots, hasn't any real power in the House or the Senate to back her up because the party only has 5% of the vote, which means that she cannot take up any Conservative or any People's Party position in toto. She has to compromise towards the left or to the middle and the left. And basically, you can say Mrs. Widmer-Schlumpf was only re-elected with the votes of the left and the middle parties, which means she can't really be a member of the People's Party.
But actually, if we look at the move, the clear move to the center, as demonstrated by the general elections in October, isn't this really a reflection of popular opinion, the centrist opinion at the moment?
Yes, it would seem that way, except the problem which many people have, myself included, is we don't really know what the center stands for. I mean, the People's Party position is easily found out, and the Social Democrats are easy to find out what they stand for, but the radicals have moved to the left. The Conservative Democrats are not really conservative, and the Greens are not necessarily left-wing. The Green Liberal Party, for instance, takes up very many right-wing positions. It's difficult to see what this so-called middle, which definitely is prevalent in Parliament, as it is a large group, if one wants to make a group out of it, it's difficult to see what they stand for.
Let's turn to the FDP, the business-friendly, or at least that's their image, and I'm sure that's fairly accurate, the business-friendly Free Democratic Party, also known as the Liberals or Radicals. Mm-hmm. They did not do very well in October's general election. They only polled, I think, 15-point-something percent of the popular vote, but they still managed to hang on to their two cabinet seats. How do you explain that?
Simply because nobody wanted to deprive the radicals or the liberals of a seat in the cabinet, knowing that this would have to go to the People's Party. But of course, you're right, with 15% of the vote, they have absolutely no right to cabinet seats anymore.
Is there also perhaps, as the leader of the FDP faction said in Parliament, rather emotionally, she's a pretty tough lady normally, but she seemed almost emotional and rather distraught when she said, we're going into hard times. We have troubles with the Americans over taxes. We have problems vis-a-vis the EU, the franc, and in other words, doing a bit of fear-mongering there and pleading for the status quo because we, in the end, even though we're not that popular, we have the magic recipe and formula for saving the country. Was there a bit of that in the decision to give them their second seat?
It could be. It could also be historical because we have to see that when the Swiss Confederation, in its present form, was founded in 1848, all cabinet ministers were from the Radical Party, and that situation continued, I think, for 50 years or so. In other words, the radicals were the mainstay of the Swiss Confederation till the 20th century, and they were always a very prominent party, mostly the leading party. And it's difficult to accept that this is no longer so. And there may be some kind of historical reflex which makes people loath to vote away a radical cabinet minister. You know, there's a sort of an old historical traditional aspect to this situation.
Sort of a grandfather clause, if you wish.
You could actually call them the grand old party of Switzerland, yes.
Let's look at the newly elected federal councillor from French-speaking Switzerland. He's the only member who's new to the cabinet. His name is Alain Berset. He's a social democrat from the bilingual German-French-speaking canton of Fribourg, neighboring on Bern. What do we know about him?
Well, he's, if you like, he's a sort of gung-ho dynamic starter in the business. He went into politics, I think, at the age of 29. He became senator at a young age, before 40, and now he's cabinet minister. He's an economist by profession, but he has, for instance, no executive experience at all in life. He's also a jazz pianist in the evening. He's pretty left-wing, so now the Social Democrats have two rather left-wing members of the cabinet, which hasn't been the case in Switzerland for many years.
The word that was used a lot to describe the outcome of the federal council elections 2011 was stability and a lack of interest in any major changes in the political composition of the present cabinet. Is that a fair summary of the situation?
Yes, it is. It goes hand in hand with an analysis of the stability as seen by the Swiss Parliament, which is basically a situation of denial. What Gabi Huber, the factional leader of the Radicals, said about problems coming towards Switzerland, i.e. the money markets, the economy, the EU, pressure from the United States, these are realities which are confronting Switzerland, but there's nobody in Parliament, really, who wants to see how serious the situation is. And that, of course, is stability if you just shut your eyes, put on your blinkers, and carry on as before.
Which would be characteristic of the Swiss political system.
In general, yes, yes.
Peter Holler, Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and analyst, thank you very much.
O'clock on a late spring morning in Rome. This is the geographic and spiritual center of Roman Catholicism in the world. The Vatican is not only a clerical center, it is also, by its own right, a city-state, the head of which is the Pope himself. At this moment, the portals of the Vatican State are being opened by members of the Swiss Guard, because one of the responsibilities of the Swiss Papal Guard is to protect the entrances to the Vatican, as well as guarding the person of the Pope. They stand guard 24 hours a day. This has been their occupation here in Rome since 1506, when 150 Swiss mercenaries crossed the Alps to take up their first papal protection duties under Pope Julius II. In 1527, the Swiss Guard was called upon for the first and last time to do battle in the name of the Pope, and a great loss of life. It was on May 6th of that year that invading Spanish and German armies attacked the Vatican. This is called the Sacco di Roma, the Sack of Rome, and cost the lives of 147 Swiss Guards, but not before more than 800 of the invaders were killed doing battle with them. It's on May 6th each year that all members of the Swiss Guard renew their allegiance to the Pope. The only Swiss soldiers permitted to continue the famous Swiss mercenary tradition of bygone centuries. Since 1982, The commander of the Swiss Papal Guard has been Colonel Roland Buchs from Fribourg in western Switzerland.
Wenn Kandidat, der das Interesse an der Schweizer Garde tut, manifestieren, muss laut dem Reglement erstens katholisch sein.
A candidate for the Swiss Papal Guard must be, of course, Roman Catholic. He must have completed basic training in the Swiss Army and must have good character references. He must also be willing to serve in Rome for at least 2 years. This is a highly disciplined unit, spiritually as well as militarily. It's a tough, demanding job, and everybody does the same kind of service regardless of age, education, or previous background. We're responsible only to the Pope, and a guardsman must feel a clear commitment to him and the Church. Service in the 100-member guard is attractive to many young men, and we have no recruitment problem.
Mit Bewegung, Schalter, get! Zweite Bewegung, zwei!
And the man who's been assigned to take me around the Vatican is Vice Corporal Stefan Meyer.
Schalter, get! Vorwärts, Marsch, on!
And now we've stepped in off the courtyard and into the armory of the Swiss Papal Guard. Corporal Meyer, hanging up in front of us here is a whole line full of the classic, the traditional Swiss Papal Guard uniform, the red, blue, and yellow. Where did these uniforms come from? I guess we all know the story that Michelangelo, the great Michelangelo, designed the uniform. Is there any truth in that?
Maybe there's truth in that. They're the colors of the family Medici. That's a family from Florence, and they had four popes during the history.
Sort of a papal family, we could almost say. And their colors were the red, the blue, and the yellow.
And maybe that Michelangelo designed also once, or he painted once, a soldier in that kind of uniform, but it was a normal uniform during that time.
It's just a legend, in other words.
That's right, yeah.
And on the other side of the armory, of course, we're talking about armor, and here we get into all kinds of ugly-looking weapons, and our acoustics change here as well, as we can hear everything from the Morning Star, that's that awful club with spikes in it, to what I would describe as beheading axes, sabers of all kinds, some very long swords that I couldn't pick up probably with even two hands, clubs, all the most vicious looking things that were used in ancient warfare. How old are some of these weapons?
Some of these weapons are very old, like you mentioned, the long swords, ceremonial sword, and we still use it today for also swearing in ceremony, or when you are going into the square, you stand there for Easter blessing or Christmas blessing. And here on this blade is written 1584. So as you see, most of the things you have here in the armor we use just for real special occasions.
Incidentally, how difficult is it to maintain these ancient weapons here?
It is difficult because it's all iron. And here in Rome during the summer it's very humid, also during the winter. And so we have to take care that they're not getting rusty.
And I know that you are not permitted to discuss this in any detail, but in addition to the traditional historic weapons here, can you confirm that the Swiss Papal Guard also has modern weapons just in case?
There is something around if it's necessary.
Thank you.
It's just 10 minutes before 11 here in St. Peter's Square in Rome. Upwards of probably more than 50,000 people have gathered here for the regular Wednesday morning general audience with the Pope. A couple of Swiss guards in colorful traditional uniform have just walked into St. Peter's and are stationing themselves near the pavilion which has been set up for the Pope himself. This is indeed one of the worst security headaches that the Swiss Guard and external forces have to cope with. General audience here in St. Peter's in Rome. From beginning to end, in this case nearly 2 hours, every moment a very tense situation for every one of the guardsmen stationed here. Vice Corporal, where do we go from here?
Now we go to the bronze door. That's the entrance to the Papal Palace.
And here we are at the bronze gate. It is indeed bronze. Actually, it's wood covered with bronze sheeting, which is green with age through oxidation. It's upwards, I think, of something like 400 years.
It is important because it's the main entrance to go up to the Papal Palace. So every visitor who has a private audience with the Pope, he comes through this gate.
We also see a lot of priests going in and out the door as well. Where are they going?
It is so, this is also the entrance to the Secretary of State. That's the brain of the Catholic Church. They're working a lot of monsignors, and of course a lot of clerical is going up there.
12 noon, the changing of the guard at the bronze door. After 2 hours' watch, these two men are reporting to be relieved of their duties.
Wachmeister, Schild auf Patrone abgelöst, nichts Spezielles.
Gut, ab.
Everything fine, nothing special to report. That's the way it should go every day, I guess.
It mostly does, that's right.
And just after the changing of the guard, we've seen a small group of people, maybe about 30 people, coming in and being led by a Swiss guard into the Papal Palace. So who are these people?
These are Swedish pilgrims. They have now a private audience of the Pope.
Abteilung, Achtung! Hit! Schulter, quit! Links, um! Buste, marsch!
Stefan Meyer, we are well and truly in the heart of the Vatican. This is a splendid chamber which defies any kind of detailed description because it's just overwhelming in its beauty. Marble everywhere, columns, gold, frescoes, murals, the ceiling, everything is covered with decoration and spectacular beauty. Where are we?
We are right now in the Royal Hall. It used to be the hall where the popes received the kings and presidents and ambassadors.
Very appropriate.
This area is scary because looking at this door there, it was in the middle of the room.
On the west side.
On the west side. behind the doors are the royal steps.
And they lead to the outside?
They lead to the outside, actually to the bronze door. There's another door right on the right side of this door. There behind is the famous Sistine Chapel. And of course, a guard has to be here that nobody of the tourists or pilgrims are going into the Papal Palace.
Private Hans-Jürg Koller is the man who's going to be locking up here this evening. What is it like when you occasionally have to come through here late at night to check up to make sure everything is all right? A little spooky, eh?
Yes, a little spooky. It reminds me on movies sometimes.
Horror movies, I guess.
Yes. It's only the first time. In time, it gets normal. It's a work like every other too.
Have you ever had any problems?
No, nothing.
So it's routine work, but has to be done?
Yes, it has to be done every hour, every night.
Well, Private Koller, do your duty and lock us in.
Thanks, yes.
It's 8 o'clock in the evening. The bronze gate has been closed, and with it, the official activities of the Secretariat of State of the Vatican. But the watch will go on all night, kept by members of the Swiss Papal Guard, as they've done faithfully since 1506. And the bolting of the giant doors at the bronze gate also signals the end of our visit with the Swiss Papal Guard at the Vatican. My special thanks go to the Pontifical Social Commission and Vatican Radio for their cooperation, and especially to Colonel Roland Buchs, my guide, Vice Corporal Stefan Meyer, and the other men of the Swiss Papal Guard. From Rome, this is Bob Zanotti thanking you for listening.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.